You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Chris Molina.
And I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Coming up, while many of us can agree that most foods taste better when homemade, there are just times when the store-bought items are as good or better. We'll look at some examples.
First, a recent report from Wisconsin's Department of Health Services shows a big increase in the number of new hepatitis C cases in Wisconsin.
10 years ago, there were a little over 200 new cases of the virus, but last year that number was more than 3,000.
That's nearly a 13-fold jump in less than a decade.
Dr. Ryan Westergaard is an associate professor of medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He's also a practicing physician in infectious diseases. Dr. Westergaard, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me on. I'm happy to talk with you.
Medically speaking, what is the hepatitis C virus and what does it do to the human body?
Hepatitis C virus is a RNA virus, which puts it in a category of things similar to HIV and some other viruses people have heard about. And it is a blood-borne virus, which means when it gets into the bloodstream, it can infect people by causing a chronic infection in their liver. The way that it's spread is through blood-to-blood contact, and the most common way in the world is through sharing of injection equipment, either for traditionally through contaminated medical equipment, or more recently, after we've solved the problem of sterilizing medical equipment, through illegal drug use, through injecting drugs.
And we'll definitely get into that in more detail. But before we do, what kind of symptoms does someone who has contracted hepatitis C experience?
Well, acute hepatitis C can cause jaundice, which means yellowing of the skin or the eyes, can cause abdominal pain, sometimes fever, and unusual symptoms can be rash or joint pain. But the more common way that hepatitis C can cause human disease is through its chronic infection. And in that context, it causes liver damage over many years in a similar way that chronic alcohol use can. Cirrhosis, or the end-stage liver disease that can cause people to have, again, yellowing of the skin or jaundice, can cause bleeding complications and swelling of the body that results of increased pressure in the body. So it causes liver disease similar to other things. And then the final common pathway, if you will, of liver failure and death from infections and bleeding are the most feared outcomes of hepatitis C.
Let's turn now to this new report from the State Department of Health Services. There has been a very dramatic increase in new cases of hepatitis C, with more than 3,000 last year compared to just 228 new cases in 2008. So what would you say is behind that rise in that last decade?
The current epidemic of hepatitis C is almost completely driven by the increase in injection drug use related to the opioid epidemic. This has been something that's been well described in larger cities in the United States and in other countries. But over the past decade, as many of your listeners have experienced firsthand, the epidemic of opioid addiction and the subset of people who have opioid use disorder who inject drugs and may not have access to sterile injection equipment like syringes and containers for mixing drugs, this proves to be a very efficient and unfortunately effective way of transmitting the virus. So as more people have become addicted and have struggled with opioid use, this has driven transmission of hepatitis C virus in a dramatic way in many communities across the country.
Dr. Westergaard, you said that there's a subset of people who are abusing opioids who are injecting them. Do we have a sense of the proportions? How many people who are addicted to opioids are using that injection method?
Well, it sort of depends on the level of resources that people have. People who have access to opioid treatment and services related to the other things like depression and trauma and anxiety that a lot of people are self-medicating for, addiction can get treated and people can recover and return to normal functioning life. People who progress to advanced stages of addiction, for for various reasons and inject drugs tend to have much more severe complications. And I would say that in communities where opioid addiction has really taken hold and affects a large proportion of people, I would say the majority of people have injected drugs at some time. And in the communities that have had these really horrible outbreaks of HIV and viral hepatitis, we see that injection is in most cases the norm. Most people who are injecting, who are using opioids and putting themselves at risk are injecting. But that's not to say that there's not a lot of people who are misusing or have opioid use disorder who don't inject. There's definitely a mix out there. But when we talk about the people who are at highest risk and the people who are becoming exposed or infected with viral hepatitis and HIV, it tends to be the subset who are injecting drugs.
We're talking with Dr. Ryan Westergaard. He's an associate professor of medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. And we are talking about a significant rise in cases of hepatitis C in Wisconsin. And let's go into those numbers a little more, Dr. Westergaard. It seems that young people, especially, the infection rates are going up at a pretty drastic rate. Tell us about that group of people.
Yes, well, 10 to 15 years ago, hepatitis C was really seen as a disease of the baby boomer generation. And in medical school and in medical training, that was really the thing that the trainees were taught to look for. People born between 1945 and 1965 comprised the bulk of people who were living with hepatitis C. And the reason for that was this virus became prevalent in the population and was circulating at a time before we knew it existed, and we didn't know how to screen for it, and the blood supply and other blood products that people get transfused were contaminated. So a large prevalent population of people in that age cohort have accounted for majority of cases. But what we're seeing now is the second wave of hepatitis C virus infection, and it's infecting people who are getting it through behaviors, and by and large, that is through injection drug use-related behaviors. And in the same way that we see the horrible statistics of young people losing their life for opioid epidemics, the same risk, the same cohort, the same people who are between the ages of 20 and 40 are probably the more accurate range, but this. The statistics that you mentioned put them in the category of, I think, 15 to 29. Those are the people that are the highest risk of starting to misuse opioids, and as a result, those are the people who are at highest risk of hepatitis C transmission.
And what can we do to interrupt that increase and treat or prevent those cases?
Well, you just mentioned both of them, and we have very effective tools to do both of these things, to treat and to prevent hepatitis C virus. We've learned a lot from how we've responded to HIV, which was the other main viral epidemic affecting people who inject drugs. On the treatment side, this is something that doesn't get enough attention, is we have drugs, combinations of medications that are effective for curing almost everybody with viral hepatitis, with hepatitis C, that is. So 95% of people will be cured of hepatitis C if they take a treatment course of a medication that can be taken by mouth in as few as 8 to 12 weeks. So this is an underutilized strategy, mostly for economic and policy-related reasons, because people who are young, who don't have good insurance, and in some cases are excluded from treatment because of they have a substance use disorder, they're not getting treatment. And people who aren't getting treatment still have the virus in their blood and they can still transmit it to others. So treatment, in my opinion, is probably the most powerful way to turn the tide against this epidemic. But that's not to say that short of treatment, we don't have effective ways to prevent hepatitis C, because we really do. We've known for years, also because of the HIV epidemic, that when we make sterile injection equipment available for people who are using drugs through free needle exchange and other types of harm reduction programs, that people will choose to inject in a way that's safe or relatively safe. It's not to say that we don't want to give people resources to treat their addiction and to get them off of drugs and to help them get to the point where they're in recovery and not using. But we know from looking at addiction and substance use disorders from a chronic disease model that people relapse and people can take years before they get to the point where they're abstinent. So meeting people where they're at, acknowledging that behavioral health is something that's not easily curable as a chronic condition, and giving people resources to keep themselves safe from infections during the instances when they're putting themselves at risk through unhealthy behavior and through drug use, is of an important policy piece and an important public health measure. We know from data across the world that this reduces the spread of HIV and hepatitis C. Many communities haven't embraced this for various reasons, but the data are pretty clear that it prevents transmission of infection.
Well, Dr. Westergaard, thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm very happy to talk with you. Thank you.
That was Dr. Ryan Westergaard, Associate Professor of Medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health and a practicing physician in infectious diseases. He was with us to talk about a big spike in hepatitis C cases over the last decade in Wisconsin.